I'm a chicken fried. A cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio. Oh, oh,
oh, oh. This is going to take an all hands on deck. And that's why I'm going to ask for a letter from our board. As I said, Senator Moody has already sent a letter to Homeland Security. Congressman Petronas has sent one into Lundy. Admiral Lundy, I think I'm saying his name right. And so we're going to need to have all assets here.
Mike Kohler, County Commissioner Mike Kohler there talking about the push, the application, the effort to secure the additional training facility and capacity for the United States Coast Guard that has suddenly become a possibility here at NAS Pensacola. As you heard him mention there, working with Jimmy Petronas' office, who is on the line with us now. Congressman, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning. How cold is it there? It's 19 up here, 17 actually.
Oh, it's a frisky 28 right now, so it's actually pretty warm. It's going to get back to being 60 or 70. I'll take that. Warm Christmas, not a snowy one. Before we get to talking about the code, I just want to make sure to cover the. You were at the parade on Saturday. For whatever reason, I did not bump into you, but you were also at Destin. You did two parades on Saturday, right?
I did, but you just don't think so much of yourself. I may have been avoiding you.
Fair enough. It seems about right. I always do worry if I'm taking enough baths. So, okay, fair enough. easy question. Which parade was better?
Oh, my God. So both parades were great. Don't get me wrong. But, man, that Pensacola parade, it was so stinking big.
I know.
We ran out of candy probably. I mean, both of them. You know, Graham went and bought an extra bunch of candy. And I think, gosh, what are we doing all this candy? And, you know, we went through a lot in Destin. But we could have had double for Pensacola and still have run out.
Yeah, it was very populated. There was a lot of people there. The last couple of parades have been a little bit light, but that one was massive for sure. Lots and lots of people. So.
Well, and if we use the official Bruce test, Bruce is our shelter dog. Bruce was in both parades with us. In the Destin parade, I got him out of the car to walk some. He was okay. In the Pensacola parade, we could not get him back in the car afterwards because he enjoyed walking in the parade so much. So I know one he likes. Really enjoyed it.
I gotcha. So the Coast Guard training facility, this kind of just suddenly comes up and, you know, all of a sudden we're looking at what, 15,000 possibly people, you know, Coasties coming here to train as a secondary boot camp facility. Realistically, how good are our odds? I know I talk with Mike Kohler. I know what his assessment is, but from your perspective, you know, you're much closer to the decision maker, so to speak. What are we really looking at here?
I'm wearing it out. So my office in D.C. is next door to the Coast Guard liaison office.
Oh, that's so, right. You know, that's right. Backseat middle on the hump works to your advantage here. Right. Go on.
Yeah. So the commandant, all those guys are always next door. So, you know, they know, because now I'm on their subcommittee of oversight, that they're constantly knocking on the door, sticking their head in. So we're working it from every level. Last week was the Coast Guard's Christmas party. I specifically went to that, and tracked down Admiral Lundy and expressed my enthusiasm for Pensacola and what we could bring and offer. So, I mean, we're working it from every angle that we can. We'll work with Senator Sullivan's office from Alaska. We'll work with, you know, Senator Scott. And we start to get a little bit of a niche of those players that have a nexus to the Coast Guard to try to work on priorities together.
Is it a getting people here to look around? What is the next step? I mean, I assume that they've got a handful of offers. You know, I hear Virginia's in the mix and a couple of other places. But, you know, what should our next goal be? What should we be hoping for?
Well, I mean, it's just like any other campaign. You've got to go out and win an election. So we got to prove what we can bring to the table. What gets me excited is the resources we have available at NAS Pensacola. Massive campus has the ability to do a lot more there because of just how much real estate we've got. And I would be willing to just, you know, be as aggressive with them as we can. We just don't need to get Kohler too close to this thing. He might put his foot in the mouth or something.
Outstanding.
Mike's been great. Mike was the first person who called me enthusiastically about this, and he's been a great champion for the idea.
I assume the answer is no change of status yet, but any progress on the anti-drilling push, the effort to keep the Gulf Coast and the test range clear of oil platforms?
Now, I have had some dialogues with some of the folks in the energy sector that, you know, did point out, because of the military presence, that is a holy grail that makes it very compelling to consider all the factors when doing any type of a lease process in the Gulf of America. So, you know, and I keep on reminding people, those two industries are not compatible.
Right.
You know, I would like to have, again, I'll remind everybody who's listening that can influence it, every chamber, every organization that does business in the Gulf, every county commission and every municipality, even special districts. If you've got the ability to write a resolution to advocate for the role that your interests have in protecting the Gulf, we will welcome those into the public comments.
Absolutely. And I know all of our local governments are doing exactly that thing. The NDAA, we finally have it. It's passed. I don't think the president has signed it yet. Pardon me of my ignorance on this, but I believe that's where we're at right now. Maybe he has, and I'm wrong. But you know, a lot of things in there that affect us. What did you guys see, or what do you want to promote or mention to people that's in there?
Well, I mean, people have pointed out, well, why aren't we codifying President Trump's executive orders? Well, we had 15 of them in the NDAA. We also codified 30 of his legislative proposals. So just because something that the president has put out as an executive order that you may be passionate about doesn't mean we didn't engross in one big piece of legislation like the NDAA. But, you know, we're focusing back on lethality, meritocracy, you know, accountability. We even worked on the whole procurement process, and then also put a 3.8% pay raise for our service members.
Nice. Almost a 4% pay raise. You know, you mentioned it with like four words. You know, we worked on procurement. Good Lord. it's a 900 plus billion dollar budget. And we know historically procurement for the military has been a massive issue. Cost overruns,
sure.
All kinds of bad acting. I mean, just, you know, programs that didn't work out, like across the board, there's been lots of issues. So say a little more. What are you working on to improve procurement?
Yeah, so as of the exact details of how we're tightening up, I'll follow up with you on that and get some more detailed language. But, you know, the procurement process in Tallahassee was challenging at times. You know, I have not really got very deep into the procurement process here in Washington, D.C., but as I've started to get more and more into it, it's a goat rope. It's a mess.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a mess. It's been that way for a long time, unfortunately. I would love to see a shrewd businessman and maybe a CFO get together and figure out how to solve that problem.
Part of the problem you got, though, is it's such a massive operation to administer, and then you want to, you know, respect cones of silence and all this, and it's
yeah.
just it's so many different silos here that unfortunately it's just difficult to manage them all without some type of gaming taking place. It's taxpayers' money.
Well, and as you know, I'm sure you're well familiar, the problem of it's the political value of a decision as opposed to the military value of a decision, or the political clout of the people advocating for something as opposed to the strategic significance of that decision, or the economic, you know, I mean, all of these are, you know, I'm with you. I want the meritocracy. Look, we're in Northwest Florida. We depend on the military. Almost 50% of Escambia and a third of Santa Rosa depends on it. But I want, you know, I believe we are a good value, but I want the best value. I want the programs that really, you know, work to the best of the country. That actually brings me to another thing I wanted to ask you about. I read a really interesting piece last week about the analysis of why the F-47 has gotten so much funding, the next generation Air Force fighter, whereas the F-A-XX, the next generation Navy fighter, has gotten almost no, like just enough to keep the program on life support, basically, having to do with the adversary with China, the distance from China that they can push our ships out to, the relevance of aircraft carriers, plus autonomous and drones, and sort of this whole constellation of things that to me ultimately tie back to what is the future of manned aviation and manned aviation training in Northwest Florida. If we dramatically change our posture away from naval aviation and aircraft carriers, or even significantly change it, that massively affects us here. What's your picture of the future with regards to that? Tell me what you're thinking about in this regard.
Well, just like you said earlier, we're always going to have pilots. You know, as we start to see the evolution of AI, and look, I never thought we would be talking about drones in such a day-to-day sense as we're talking today. 10 years ago, you wouldn't even thought about these things.
Yeah.
But they are going to be a real part of whatever our next force projection is for the Trump administration and moving forward. I mean, we've seen visually how effective drones can be without putting, you know, men and women in harm's way. So, I mean, all that's going to be taken into consideration. But there's still sometimes you're going to have a real set of eyes and somebody to pull the trigger. So I don't see this, you know, going away overnight. But again, I think AI is what's become the game changer, especially when it comes to smart accuracy and lethality of focusing strictly on who the assailants are versus who are the innocents.
Yeah, and one of the things, and I was talking with Admiral Huffman about this on Friday, is he made the point that the sailors who are coming in now are so easy with technology that they're far more adaptive to it than even we are. They're kind of, the Navy's kind of trying to let them, you know, govern things as much as possible, just because they're native speakers of the thing that's going to define the future, which is, you know, good news for the training mission. The healthcare stuff,
100%.
Obviously the shutdown was related to healthcare disagreements. I don't think we're any closer to a deal in the Senate. The Speaker Johnson has been working on this roughly the same package, as I understand, the health savings accounts, $1,000 or $1,500 per person. But I mean, January is another deadline. What's going to happen, and what's going to happen to people's healthcare bills?
You know, so just because we have a majority in both chambers doesn't mean it's a slam dunk to pass the type of policies that are the best interest of the taxpayer. You have got what we call blue state Republicans. We have Republicans in New York State, contrary to what some of us may think about. But you've got those blue state Republicans who have a totally different squish, because you have a state that has expanded Medicaid, has done a number of things that makes a policy from Washington, D.C. harder when you have to inoculate all 50 states of where this federal policy is going to be executed. So with a margin of 5, essentially, and you might as well say on a good day it's a margin of 1, when we try to pass some type of a health care policy, something that is such a tinderbox issue, yeah, these guys are—they're worried for their life to get reelected, because they know that they're an endangered species in their state. So the speaker's been working all through the weekend trying to bring in for a landing a health care bill that brings some common sense and some empowerment to the consumer. So we'll see. Talks were very difficult. At least some of the little bloggers out there on the internet that I follow have talked about some of the internal showing that is breaking down. But this is also part of a negotiating strategy, as you leak to the press, you know, how bad things are in order to try to help your leverage point, because somebody may be winning the upper hand. And I hope the upper hand is the taxpayer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a same thing. And you're exactly right. You know, managing the fear factor and the level of the crisis and making it seem worse than it is, if that works to your advantage, those are all well-worn political strategies. Jimmy Petronas, he is our congressman from Florida, District 1. Jimmy, as always, thank you for the time. We won't talk to you next week, but in the new year. So have a Merry Christmas, have a Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
I can call next week if you want. I love talking to you.
I'll be out next Monday. So
I'll call you where you are. That's okay.
We'll just have a conversation in my house.
Mobile phone is fantastic technology.
I love it. Jimmy, thanks for the time, sir. I appreciate you.